evening, y'all. Now it's time for you to sit back, chill out, and enjoy as KKFI 90.1 FM presents another episode of Shots in the Night.
Howdy, everybody. I'm Chuck Wagon Charlie, here to tell you that the Salmonella Brothers family of fine foods and Amalgamated Industrial Food and Rubber Incorporated are teaming up to provide an exciting, underappreciated animal product for you and your family. Have you ever considered eating armadillo? Well, we have thousands of mostly alive armadillos. And we have a new cookbook full of exciting armadillo recipes, including Deep Dish Armadillo by the French chef Petri Henri, Armadillo on the Half Shell, and Barbecued Armadillo on a Stick by yours truly, Chuck Wagon Charlie. All armadillos are hand-selected. Bag 'em, Petri! So come on down and bring the kids. We are right next to the Knock-Knee Nuclear Power Plant. Take it from me, Chuck Wagon Charlie. You don't know eating until you had armadillo.
What happens when two love goddesses chance to meet? Let's listen in when Aphrodite Meets a Hooker by Roseanne Devine.
Give Hera a little advice about how to hold on to a man, and she throws me clear across the heavens. Where am I? This doesn't look like any part of Olympus I've been in. Maybe it's the slums. Probably find Hephaestus around here, pounding on his old anvil. Oh, who's that leaning in the doorway? Some slum goddess, I suppose. Hey, excuse me?
What you want, girl? This is my corner. Don't you know the territory?
No. I don't know where I am or how I got here.
Oh, honey, you got to keep off them drugs till after your shift. If you ain't on the ball, John's just gonna use you and abuse you and you won't see a dollar. And then your pimp will use you and abuse you all over. And that won't be pretty. And neither will you for a week after.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You got a name? I'm Charmaine.
I'm Aphrodite.
Aphrodite. Aphrodite. Girl, you ain't Afro nothing. You about as Afro as Lindsay Lohan. Who you work for?
Zeus.
Never heard of him. Must be new. Must be stupid, too. Because if your pimp try to muscle in on chick's territory, there is gonna be bloodshed. So Zeus sent you here.
No, Hera, his wife. I think I overstepped my bounds with her.
Oh, I got you there. Ugly bitch wife done sent you to a place to get killed. You been messing around with her man?
No. Well, maybe. A little. You don't say no to Zeus, even if he is your father. Especially if he is your father.
What? You done it with your old man? Girl, that is sick. Doing it with your old lady's boyfriend is expected, but your old man? Ooh, I ain't going there. You better get off my street before Chick's goons see you.
Oh, okay.
And get yourself some real hooker clothes. What is that long white getup? You dress up like a virgin? Is that your game?
You don't like my clothes? We all dress like this on Olympus.
Zeus pimps virgins. Well, I never. And you ain't either. You told me so.
I am so confused.
You look. Wait a minute. You that girl on the clamshell with the flying hair?
Well, yeah. In Italy. They call me Venus there.
Yeah, I seen that picture. Don't know where. Maybe on a packet of condoms or something. Look, honey, you gotta get away from that Zeus guy. Maybe you can come work for Chick, but not on my street.
Well, I don't know. I...
Oh! Where'd she go? She just fly away? Oh, that's spooky. Hey, big guy. You want some loving on Valentine's Day?
Scott Turner gives a heartwarming study of fatherhood in Stitches.
My father wore a charming, subtle smile. I say subtle because it was mostly closed off by years of shyness about his crooked, discolored teeth, one of which, the upper left lateral incisor, poked out between his lips. Being a sensitive man of wry humor who adored his two sons, he couldn't help but allow his smile to break out from time to time. And beneath the smile, an equally constrained laugh would peal at all the most welcome moments, often when I very much needed to hear it. As a child, I was blanketed with each spontaneous expression of mirth, warmed head to toe, and I knew the utter authenticity of my father's subtle smile. My father was not a strong man, nor confident, nor optimistic. As a postal clerk, he stewed over the economy and cursed himself for not earning enough income. As a supervisor, he second-guessed everything he did and doubted his abilities, no matter how much his people praised him. Once again a postal clerk, he mixed tranquilizers with alcohol, the latter which he had imbibed for years unknown to me. He screamed himself out of his sleep. When I was 10, he sat at the dinner table and tried to stab his wrist with a fork. He finished off what I later learned to be a marriage that had been without love for several years. The facade of our family, adorned with block parties, summer vacations, holiday celebrations, and other diversionary accoutrements, crashed and splintered. And my father's smile, still subtle and authentic, no longer gave. It begged. My father, my divorced father, was not so much the father of his two adolescent sons as he was their weekend homeboy with all the cash, season tickets, rock concerts, road trips, R-rated movies, mini-golf, arcades, burgers, pizza, and all the pop to wash it down, and Friday night after dark cinema on cable. Sometimes he had pop with us. Sometimes he had something else. Sometimes he said he was too tired and told us to take the tickets, cash, and keys to his Pontiac Grand Prix and go without him. Naturally, we did. We were young. School and work sucked all week, and we felt we deserved this. We didn't care. It gradually got boring, and we stopped. From these years, I have no image of my father's smile. I have little recollection of his face. My father, later forced into retirement, spent his last decade in a nursing home where he could no longer drink. He had a monthly government annuity that all went to this place where he was mothballed. This is where he stopped walking, got dumped into a wheelchair, and parked in front of a hall window. This is where his heart congested. This is where he lost all of his teeth and waited 3 months for a set of dentures that never came. This is where he found faith that sustained him and then, at last, failed him. When he first arrived, he struck up a fine rapport with a young pastor who relocated after 6 months. This connection would never be replaced, but he clung to his spiritual awakening. What else did he have? A son who visited when he could, and a son who, bearing his grandchildren, never visited at all. He asked for forgiveness from his family and received it sincerely, many times, but it never took. He lacked confidence even in his own redemption. He was terrified of dying and going to hell. My father died nearly 7 years ago. His two grown sons viewed the body. My brother, standing next to his wife, the woman who talked him out of visiting his father because he'd had a negative moral influence on his upbringing, felt guilty and began to cry. I put my arm around him because we were in a funeral home and there were attendants watching. I had already mourned my father's passing long before he died, so I took the opportunity to examine the mortician's handiwork. Seemed as though he were in a peaceful slumber, which is the desired result. Makeup was fairly close to a healthy complexion he lost 20 years earlier. They trimmed his beard with care. They packed his mouth so that we could pretend he had a full set of teeth again. There was no discolored incisor showing between his lips, but there was suture line. They sewed his mouth shut. Peaceful slumber. Who has their lips sewn together before they turn in? So much for the makeup. His remodeled mouth had a death grip on my eyes. My father's memory is marred to me. He was amusing, well-meaning, and taught me very little. I somewhat recall his gripes about work, his anecdotes and regrets about growing up with his family. And my mind has replayed fragments of faded vacation footage and of parties with their friends' families. And I see dissolving images of holiday dinners at my aunt's house. And I hear phantasmal echoes of ranting and swearing and useless sex in the dead of night. And I wander through the shadows of great unrealized dreams. I am compelled to take inventory of the man, attempting to retrospectively learn something I missed while fighting my own demons. I veer away from this absurd pursuit, briefly revisiting my father's simple, soft, subtle smile before the stitches pull it tightly shut.
You know what flips my trigger? People have bumper stickers that say, honk if you love something. So I'm driving down Main Street and up comes a big old monster SUV. I think it was an Escalade or something like that. It was riding my butt so close that she could read the magazine in my back seat. I was even doing 5 miles an hour over the speed limit, and she was drafting me like she was Dale Earnhardt. Well, she had enough and came zooming around me doing 55. I wasn't too irritated, especially when I saw the honk if you love Jesus bumper sticker on the back. So I did what every good God-fearing man would do. I honked. Well, that young precious lady gave me the finger, and it wasn't the we're number one finger, if you know what I mean. Not very Christian-like. But on the other hand, she might have been mad about my bumper sticker. It says, Jesus loves you. Everyone else thinks you're an a-hole.
Our musical interlude is Blue Suede Heart by Ezra Lee Michaels.
Well, you can put me down, lie to my face, slander my name all over the place. Do whatever you want to do. But oh my God, lay off my heart, I said, don't you step on my blue sweetheart. You can do anything, just lay off of my blue sweetheart. Can steal my clothes, your friends, stalk my pictures on Instagram, do whatever you want to do, but oh my God, lay off my heart, I said, don't you step on my blue sweetheart. You can do anything, just lay off of my blue sweetheart. It's a blue, blue, blue suede heart. It's a blue, blue, blue suede heart, baby. Blue, blue, blue suede heart. It's a blue, blue, blue suede heart, and you can do anything. Just let off my blue suede heart.
Do you have a knack for assessing the deficiencies in others? Is your life experience more valuable than the whole room's combined? Would it be a crime to keep your instincts and intuitions to yourself, robbing humanity of your sagely gifts? Do you mean well? If so, try minding your own goddamn business. That's right. The Common Sense Treatment Center of America is currently seeking volunteering delusional adults to participate in clinical trials aimed at observing the effects of an exciting and experimental new therapy known as Minding Your Own Goddamn Business. Potential candidates for Minding Your Own Goddamn Business must be at least 21 years or older and possess the following traits. Believes eye-rolling is a sign of validation to continue speaking. Feels compelled to cut in and correct any conversation within earshot. Feels justified to cut in and correct any conversation within earshot. Still not sure if you're the right fit? Think back on the past year. Have you been slapped in the face by a pregnant woman? Have you been slapped in the face by a woman who looks pregnant but isn't? Smacked by a single parent? Socked by a person of color? Struck by a stranger? Slugged by that person in front of you in line buying prunes, rubber gloves, antiseptic, and a lint roller? If so, call today to schedule your free screening for Minding Your Own Goddamn Business. Eligible volunteers will be enrolled right away and will start treatment immediately. So remember to bring a toothbrush, a change of clothes, and a list of emergency contact numbers. But don't bother packing a bag, because at the Common Sense Treatment Center of America, all baggage gets checked at the door.
Billy Mack and Tilly May's first date comes to a premature end when a goat interrupts them in The Hole, an old joke turned into a new story by Don Foote.
Before I get into this tale, let me introduce myself. My birth name is William McDonald, but most people call me Billy Mack. I grew up in southern Missouri in the country. This story took place when I was nigh on to 20 years old. Me and Tilly Mae Trimble was walking down the path to the old farm pond. She was 18, I believe. Anyways, I thought I might impress her with my fishing skills and catch her a big old bass or such.
Beauty of a day, ain't it, Tilly May?
Sure is. I know you said you were going to catch me that big fish they call One Eye, but Billy Mack, I figure you're just doing that because you got designs on me.
Tilly May, you're right about that. What say we go and... Hey!
Just as I was starting to feed her my finest line, I spied a hole just off the beaten path. It was around 4 or 5 feet in diameter and appeared to be deep.
What the heck we got's here?
That's a pretty deep hole there, Billy Mack.
That's a fact. I ain't never seen it before. You?
Nope. Wonder just how deep it is.
Tilly May, why don't you throw that there stick in it and we can see?
Well, I don't know about this stick, Billy Mack. It's kind of ugly. But that one over there looks to be a pretty stick.
Tilly May, for crying out loud, we can get you a stick any old place.
Okay, okay. But you got to find a pretty one for me if I use that one.
I promise.
Tilly May held the stick over the hole and dropped it. And we both leaned over to watch and listen. But there was no sound of it hitting the bottom.
Whoa, that can't be right. Should we get a bigger stick?
Hang on there, Tilly May. There's a big old rock. We ought to hear it good. I'll roll her over there.
So now I drops the rock, and we still didn't hear nothing.
Now that just ain't right.
Billy Mac, looky over here. There's a big old log sticking out of these bushes. I think I can get a good enough grip on it and help you carry it over to the hole.
Okay. Okay, let's lay her down here at the hole. Now, we just tips it up like... Yep, that's got her. There she goes.
As we listened to hear that log hit the bottom, there was a rustling sound from behind the bushes. And suddenly, and I'm not fooling, a goat runs past us just carrying on something fierce. And then, just as sure as I'm standing here, that there goat jumps into the hole. Tilly May and me looked at the hole, then back to the area that goat come from, and once more back at the hole, and then again at each other. There was no sound of anything hitting the bottom.
Well, don't that beat all? Never seen anything like that before. You?
Nope, never.
Well, with the activity being done and all, I tried to get back on track with my impressing Tilly May.
I gotta say, that was exciting but weird at the same time, Tilly May.
I agree.
I took hold of her hand and started back to the path, thinking of my best romancing lines.
So, where was we before all this came about?
Well, if I remember...
Jasper! Oh, Jasper!
Billy Mac, that voice sure sounds familiar.
Oh, yeah?
So now the mood is fixing to be plowed under just like a soybean field as a farmer comes through the bushes and walks up to us.
Hey there. Y'all seen a goat around here?
Great Uncle Clay? I thought I recognized that voice. It's me, Tilly. Tilly May.
Tilly May Trimble? That you? Well, I swear, child, I didn't even recognize you. You done growed so much.
Yes, I sure have. This here's Billy Mac. Billy Mac, this is my great uncle Clay Mulder.
Well, you can figure where the mood was now, eh? But what could I do but shake his hand?
Pleased to meet you, Mr. Mulder. You asked if we seen a goat? As a matter of fact, we did. There's a goat come a-running through them there bushes, run right by us and jumped into this here hole.
Hole looked pretty deep.
Yep.
That's what we thought.
Anyways, that couldn't have been my goat.
How so?
Well, my goat, Jasper, was tied to a big old log.
You don't say.
That's a fact. I also find it curious that the log disappeared too.
Well, I'll be.
I knowed I tied him up good, because old Jasper's a prize-winning goat, yes, sir. He got first place in the Pine Ridge All-State Farm goat runoff.
How about that? Huh.
Anyways, I'm thinking somebody done took off with him because he's famous and all. Tell you what, I don't like to think what I might do to whoever took him if and I find him.
At this enlightening statement, Tilly May and me looked at each other, and then began to walk off slowly.
Well, we best be getting along. Sure hope you find your Jasper. If and we see him, we'll try to shoo him this way.
Appreciate that.
Tilly May, what do you think we should do now? I mean...
Oh, I don't know, Billy Mac. It makes me a little nervous to be around here now. I remember back when some kids took his pet possum, Hiram, as a joke, and he... Oh, never mind. I think I better just get on home. We can do this again another day.
Sure. Okay. That'd be okay, I guess.
Well now, this tale sounded like it might have put the brakes on any romancing, but don't you fret none. We did end up meeting another day, and many more days after that. Yep, He'll be 50 years married come this December. We had 3 young'uns, Carly Sue, the youngest, Patty Elizabeth, the middle child, and our firstborn son, Jasper.
Tonight's show was brought to you in part by FamilyOnly.com. If your girlfriend left you, and you really do miss her, pick up your phone and call your sister.
You don't have to be lonely at FamilyOnly.com.
Thanks for listening. Tonight's performers were Larry Bradshaw, Mark Nagy, Katie Hogan, Mary Gerlt, Scott Turner, Bob Baker, Don Foote, and Michael Donnessy. Tonight's show was produced by Bill Pierce and Roseanne Devine.
Shots of the Night is going to a new hour-long format beginning March 21st. We won't have Fifth Thursdays, but we'll have 1 hour every third Thursday at 7 p.m.
Yay!
Thanks, Mom, our number one fan.
Tune in to our next Shots in the Night program at 7 p.m. on the Thursday night special time slot. If you miss us on the radio, visit shotsinthenight.org to listen to our archive shows, read about our actors and writers, leave a comment, or subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. We're Shots in the Night Radio Theater on KKFI 90.1 FM, Kansas City Community Radio.